good afternoon, Juno. It's just after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. We have a packed schedule today. Lots of wonderful folks coming in to talk to us. Tom Kazaya is here. He's going to tell us about tonight's UAS presentation on his book, Pilgrim's Wilderness. Scott Burton has recorded an interview with David Walker. We'll be hearing about the wearable art postcard today. Daniel Kirkwood's doing a concert at the Rookery on Sunday. He's just come back to Juneau, and we'll talk to him and maybe hear some of his music today. The Fireside Lecture tonight, naturalist Bob Armstrong, Rita O'Clair, and Richard Karstensen are revising their popular book, The Nature of Southeast Alaska, for release in 2014. So they'll be talking about that. Abby Folkt is doing the February featured artist at the Juneau Artist Gallery, and she'll be telling us about her jewelry. And there's a special concert by Pierce Lane, a house concert coming up as he is here in the state for 3 weeks as part of the Sitka Summer Music Festival run-up. So all of that happening today on Juneau Afternoon. Right now it's time for National Native News, and we'll be back with all those guests after that.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new online resource for tribes to help address violence against Native women is launched. The Department of Justice Office of Violence Against Women has established the National Indian Country Clearinghouse on Sexual Assault. The website includes information on grant opportunities, data on Indian Country, court cases, and details about laws, like the Violence Against Women Act and the Tribal Law and Order Act. Lorraine Edmo is Deputy Director for Tribal Affairs in the Office on Violence Against Women. She says the clearinghouse is also a value for victims and advocates.
You can click on resources available for tribal shelters, for instance, and it will list all of the tribal shelters in the nation where a person can be referred to and go for services.
Bea Hansen is Principal Deputy Director.
In Indian Country, we're really just starting to devote real resources to deal with sexual violence. I mean, some people in some tribes have been doing this for a while, but in the kind of grand scheme of things, in terms of responding to issues that are happening in Indian Country, I think, you know, this has been a real important focus for the federal government to partner with tribes to address this issue.
She says the office supports tribal sovereignty, and the clearinghouse was developed to meet the needs of women and tribal communities.
I think that, you know, realistically, in some cases, the numbers may go up before they go down because there's a lot of women that don't report this. Sexual violence is a huge problem that is vastly underreported to police and under-investigated and under-prosecuted.
The clearinghouse is funded by the Office of Violence Against Women. It can be found online at niccsa.org. An Oklahoma community is threatening to sue at least four tribes over the collection of taxes. As KGOU's Kirk Gortney reports, the tribes are disputing the city's claims.
The letter came to the leaders of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation, the Absentee Tribe of Shawnee, the Sac and Fox Nation of Oklahoma, and the Kickapoo Tribe of Oklahoma, saying the tribes were not collecting sales taxes like they're supposed to. The letter from Shawnee Mayor Wesley Maynard cites a requirement in federal law that tribal businesses within city limits have to collect taxes on sales made to non-tribal members. The letter also says the city may take legal action on its own, in part because the Oklahoma Tax Commission is not demanding sales tax enforcement by the tribes. Citizen Potawatomi Nation Chairman John Rocky Barrett says his tribe disagrees with the mayor's claims. The tribe owns a grocery store Shawnee officials say is within the city limits, but which Barrett says has been tribal land since 1867. The city says it's seen a decline in sales tax figures, but the Journal Record newspaper reports the mayor and city treasurer have been quoted as saying Shawnee is experiencing growth in sales tax collections. Barrett says the burden for collecting the sales taxes is on the city, not the tribe. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney.
The Associated Press reports a significant Kwalam language speaker of Pacific Northwest tribes has died. Hazel Sampson spoke the native language before learning English. Sampson helped develop a Kwalam dictionary in the 1990s. She died this week at age 103 in Washington. Native people were among the hundreds of thousands at a parade this week to welcome home the Seattle Seahawks. Yakima Nation fans took buses to the Seattle event. Lummi people gave a member of the football team a hand drum. Willie Lane from the Lummi Nation says the team gave him so much pride with their Super Bowl win.
Finally, we got it here in our home land right here.
The Seattle Seahawks defeated the Denver Broncos 43-8 on Sunday. During this month in 1885, the Lumbee were recognized as an Indian tribe by North Carolina. The tribe has long sought to gain federal recognition. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Support for National Native News comes from the Tribal Telecom 2014 Summit, February 10th through the 12th, bringing together tribes and industry partners to advance digital opportunities for tribal communities. On the web at tribaltelecomconference.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes and 20 seconds after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My first guest has an interesting situation that's developed. He was telling me before the interview that if you go to the Amazon list of the best 100 books right now, he's number 5, did you say?
That was what they said.
Tom Kazaya is here. He's talking tonight at UAS. He's going to give a presentation on his book, Pilgrim's Wilderness, which is the rather interesting story over the last several years, or quite a number of years back, of Papa Pilgrim and the McCarthy situation and like that. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
So let's set the stage. You have an excerpt from the book that kind of tells us what it's about.
Okay, I can start with
that. Let's start with that.
Okay. In the winter of 2002, a man with the wild gray beard of a biblical prophet showed up in the remote Alaska ghost town of McCarthy with his wife and 14 children. He called himself Papa Pilgrim. His family found a deserted mining camp in the mountains nearby, deep inside North America's largest national park, and set about building a homestead life straight out of the country's pioneer past. Pack horses, goat milk, bear meat, fiddles and guitars, and a Caterpillar D5 bulldozer. By the 7th month, the Pilgrim family did not use the pagan names of the calendar. They were at war with the National Park Service. I was a reporter for Alaska's biggest newspaper. Pilgrim was wary of reporters, bureaucrats, police officers, and park rangers. He said he would let me ride on horseback to the homestead to hear his story in the company of his adult children, because my wife and I had a cabin of our own near McCarthy.
So you live in Homer.
Yeah,
but
I live in Homer.
You've had the cabin up there in McCarthy for a while.
Yeah. So I knew the area, and I'd been hearing these stories about this family out there that had moved out and was causing quite a stir and had big supporters and big detractors and a fight going on with the park about how to live inside a national park in Alaska where the parks are different from everywhere else. And it all sounded like a great story to me as a reporter, so I headed out there.
What was the basis of the conflict? What were the regulations that they were supposedly violating?
If you own private land inside a national park, and this is like a giant park the size of Switzerland, but if you own any private land in there, the park had to, under the 1980 law, grant you access, but it was also supposed to be subject to their reasonable environmental rules, and so the question of what was adequate access had never really been resolved. And so this family moved out there and they bought an old copper mine 13 miles up the valley outside McCarthy, and then Papa Pilgrim got on this bulldozer and decided to clear out the old historic wagon road that had been washed away and grown over and pretty much disappeared in the previous decades. And did all of that without asking anyone. He was refusing to talk to the Park Service on any grounds, and so the park didn't take kindly to that. You know, you can imagine somebody taking off on a bulldozer across Yellowstone National Park. They're not going to be very enthusiastic about that. But Alaska, it was a little different and really kind of untested. So it started out as this story about a bulldozer in the park.
Now, Papa Pilgrim had quite a past.
It was amazing.
He didn't just spring full blown as a pioneer with a D5 cat.
Nobody knew what his past was, but I was able to talk my way out there and went out with his kids and spent a little time out there on their homestead at the Motherlode mine, and you know, it was very strange experience. It was kind of felt like I was in a cult a little bit, but on the other hand, the kids were so great and good looking and friendly and knowledgeable about how to survive in the wilderness and gifted musicians. They made a great presentation, and it was only after I got back from my visit out there that I started looking into who is this guy, Robert Hale, and found that he'd, you know, grown up affluent in a young playboy in Fort Worth, Texas. His father was a friend of J. Edgar Hoover's, and he eloped as a kid with John Connolly's daughter, who died weeks later of a gunshot wound to the head, and he was suspect. And I mean, and it goes on and on from there. All these, he was like this Forrest Gump character going through the 60s, all the places that he showed up on his way to New Mexico and then finally to Alaska, to that very end of the road, and then out beyond the end of the road to the ultimate hideout with his wife and 15 children.
Tom, was there a point where you started releasing this stuff before the book? I mean, were you part of the were you in the fight between the Park Service and Pilgrim? Or?
Well, I was just as a reporter. I was just covering it and going out there to write about that. And then it was only, you know, years, like 3 years later, when suddenly the word got out that the oldest two daughters had escaped on snow machine to get out of this remote homestead, and that their brothers had followed, and that there'd been this terrible abuse going on, and the troopers launched a manhunt to track this guy down. It took them 2 weeks, and they finally got him in jail, and then there was a, you know, prolonged legal case, to at which point eventually a lot of it finally came out in court. And then afterwards, and the reason I decided that this could be a book was I got to talk with the kids, and they became, you know, trusted me enough to tell me what it was like from their point of view growing up inside this sort of family cult, and how imprisoned they were especially by the Christianity, by the sort of warped Christianity that he had come up with, as, you know, they couldn't rebel against their father or they would lose their souls, and that was a bigger prison even than the wilderness was.
You referred to the brand of Christianity that he was pursuing as Calvinist. What were the characteristics? What did he lead his family into?
Well, you know, everybody sort of, you had to prove that you had been saved, and he was the judge who would say if you'd been saved or not, and so you had to kind of curry his favor, and he would use that to play one kid against the other, and to tell them that they hadn't seen what they thought they had seen him doing, and just to have a sort of tight control over them. And the only book he allowed in the house, none of them could read, and he would just read to them from the Bible and from Pilgrim's Progress, the old John Bunyan book from the 17th century, which was a very, you know, he was a Puritan minister in England, and this is an allegory of making your way through the wilderness of the world on the straight and narrow path, and that was kind of what he turned that wagon road to the Motherlode mine into, the straight and narrow path of the 17th century Puritan imagination.
Tom, what's the plan for tonight? You're going to talk at, I think, what, 7 o'clock?
Going to talk, at, yeah.
Yeah, at, 7 o'clock at the University of Alaska.
At Egan Hall.
Yeah.
And talk about the book, and I've got some slides of the family and the place, and talk about some of the themes of wilderness and nature that made this a sort of a deeper book, you know, this sort of encounter with our world here in Alaska. And he kind of typified so many things about America. He was a great, great shapeshifter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sounds fascinating. So this is part of the UAS Sound and Motion program, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's tonight, and it's at Egan Hall. That's the lecture hall, the large amphitheater kind of thing on the end of Egan Hall, on the other end of the building from the library.
Right.
And it's open to the public, and it starts at 7 o'clock. Tom Kazaya, author of Pilgrim's Wilderness, I wish you good luck attracting a huge audience tonight to this event. I think a lot of people are going to hear something that that is going to surprise them. Because
quite a story.
Yeah, it's an excellent story. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
The Juneau Arts and Humanities Council Wearable Art Show is coming up this weekend at Centennial Hall. It's in its 14th year. The theme is Technicolor. Artists have been preparing for this for a month, and KTOO's Scott Burton caught up with three of the participants. He filmed some short profiles, and we'll be playing excerpts from those this week. This is about David Walker.
My name The Treadwell Mine saltwater pump house has stood set.
And I started my wearable art career here in Juneau. Before the first wearable art show here in town, I actually had no idea what even wearable art was or that it existed. After seeing the first show, I was intrigued, and with a free pile of veneer I acquired, my career started as a wearable artist. If you asked other people, I think everybody would say that the ball gown was their favorite piece. For me, I love the ball gown, and it's an incredible piece, but it looks just like a ball gown. I like a piece that is a little more unique. Prehistoric Princess is the first one I brought over to WOW in 07, which in a lot of ways is my favorite. When I started the dress, I started as like a evening gown, and then I felt it needed something more than just being an evening gown made out of wood. And so I added the spikes. The only dress that I've actually done that has a theme and had a reason to be exactly that way was Beast and the Beauty. And Beast and the Beauty is actually a tribute to women living with cancer. And so my wife at the time was battling cancer, and so it was an inspiration to do something to honor and represent that battle. My process pretty much runs year-round. Usually, I will take and build the complete dress out of a stiff cardboard, similar thickness to the veneer. Then I will take that pattern apart and then transfer it to the veneer. My whole process is so trial and error that that failure part, that error part, doesn't necessarily bother me. It's just a learning process that I take in mind, and next time I adjust it to do something else. An artist has to, I think, leave space for creativity and change and what may happen, what may not. So you can only calculate so much, and then from there it takes a life of its own. It evolves into something, and you direct that involvement. I mean, you make it go the way you want it to go, but my pieces especially tend to somewhat create themselves in what their final product will look like.
You can see the entire video, which includes footage from the past wearable art shows, on ktoo.org, our website. A little music to begin, and then we will be into our next guest. Thank you.
light that lit the shadow of a doubt. And you were the dark before the night found out. But I am wrecked upon the mercy of the waves. Well, two dogs were fighting and I was pulling them away. You left the water on as you entered the fray. But I can see you left the lights on in your car. And I put the dogs out for the night. But I can see you left the lights on in your car. Yeah, and your car was parked crooked in the yard, pointed up the road and at the northern star. But I can see the lights have gone out in your car.
If you like that, you can get more. My guests, and the one who was playing the guitar, of course, is Daniel Kirkwood, back in Juneau after a little time out. And he's here with Travis Smith, the owner of the Rookery. And I guess you're doing a concert at the Rookery on Sunday night at 7, right?
Thank goodness. It'll be great to be back.
Yeah. Where you been?
Now, I've been in and out of town for a few years. I was one of those just perpetually seasonal people, continually having my heart broken. But I'm back now here in town and coming to the Rookery every day for my coffee, and Travis is going to let me come play on Sunday night. So it'll be my pleasure if folks want to come down and hear some acoustic music. We'll be there playing right around 7.
You didn't give away your extra tufts the last time you left, right? There, you still have them?
Yeah, I got a big pile of them starting to accumulate all over the country. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, that's required costumery for Juneau. So, Travis, you've got soundstage operation going at the Rookery along with pretty good food.
Yeah, we've kind of just at the beginning of January restarted live music. We kind of took the last year off as we figured out the dinner scene, which has taken off for us great, and kind of decided that we're going to try music a couple times a week on Sunday nights. So Daniel's going to be the third show. Won't be the first time he's played at the Rookery, won't be the last. Doors will open up at 6. We've got to have a limited menu from the kitchen. And show will go until around 9 or so.
All right. No extra fee. There's not like a cover charge.
No cover charge. Just, you know, they'll probably have a jar out. Yeah. I know Dan's going to have some albums available.
He's got a new CD out, right?
Yeah, sure, Dylan. I'll actually have some physical copies. For the most part, I've been selling it online, but the album Kill Olympia will have copies for sale at the show.
It's got a great cover. Picture of two lawn chairs and a couple of, and we understand now what was being killed when Olympia died.
Oh, well, yeah, there's a couple of beer bottles sitting around the chair. I don't know if that's the exact reference. Yeah, so you can see that album if you go on Spotify, if you go on iTunes, if you go on dankirkwood.bandcamp.com. You can listen to it for free or you can purchase it. I don't mind either way. My hope is just that people will listen to it, enjoy it. So I'll be playing songs from that album. Mm-hmm. The one that we just heard there called Northern Star is one of the songs featured there. That's an album that features a lot of folks from around Juneau, folks who've been in and out before, Folks like Libby Stringer's playing fiddle on that album, although most of it was recorded in Nashville. You definitely get to hear people from Juneau on that recording.
I got to ask you about the lyric. It's obviously a story that happened to you, or not.
Which one now?
The one you just sang with the lights going out in the car.
Yeah, well, that's a song about that's a song about having a girl that you think might be aiming to leave you.
Ah, okay.
You know, and she's over at your house. Man, the dog's bit her hand. We've got sort of a medical emergency on our hands here, and she's, you know, she's got her car parked and ready to drive on up the road, but sounds like the battery's gone dead, so maybe she's going to stay the night.
Maybe she'll stay the night. Huh? So is this autobiographical? Or?
Everything is in metaphor.
I see, okay.
You can only take them so far. I've gotten into plenty of trouble with my girl because of that. Holy cow.
You going to give us another?
Sure
okay.
Can.
Do it.
This is a song called...
The concert, we got to say this one more time before we get into that, because we're going to go out with music. So the concert is Sunday night, 7 o'clock at the Rookery. And, oh, Travis has got another thing
coming
up.
Yeah, a couple other things we have coming up. Just okay. People might have been aware, we're doing a couple of Valentine's dinners on Friday. The 8 p.m. seating is full. There's about 10 seats left for 5:30. On Saturday, we're doing the Sad Singles Saturday dinner. That's almost, it's about half full right now.
There,
you
man.
Don't have to be single. Sounds like Dan might be.
You have to be
sad. Saturday rolls around. And then also going on today, you know, it's First Friday. We've got a new photographic exhibition up. A local photographer named Kaylee McGoey, and she's doing a show titled We Find Our Way, of which all the proceeds from that show are going to go to the Aware Shelter. Yeah, we're excited to see people out. Excited to see people out for dinner and the concert this weekend, and we'll just see you downtown at the Rookery.
Yeah, just very briefly, did you make it into the First Friday Guide?
We did.
Good. Yeah. So let's just say that the First Friday Guide is up right now. If you go to ktoo.org and click on February First Friday Guide, it's got a banner with a Van Gogh-like boat on the right-hand side. You can view images and descriptions of all of the evening's events. So if you still have an event to share, you can send it right now to Heather at ktoo.org, and we'll actually get it in because we can modify this right up to, well, even while it's being used. So anyway, February's First Friday Guide from KTOO, big success the last First Friday, and the same thing now. So you carry it around on your iPhone, and it tells you what's next and
that's
where
great.
You might want to go and like that. So take us out with music, sir.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I do hope to see folks at the Rookery Sunday at 7 p.m., and I couldn't be just happier to have an establishment like that in our town. It's really a pleasure to have you guys making great food and coffee for us, Travis.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, I'll see her standing across the ocean. In glowing orbit, the planet's in motion, I know. Yeah, I know. And I'll take my lessons from the books of history. Won't read ahead, I want to keep the mystery alive. Yeah, alive. I once had luck on my side. I might get lucky again. I'm up in orbit and I hope that we collide. And I'll get lucky again. Cowboy, in turns of phrases, I'll walk the straight lines in the wild places I go. I go. And I'll be your spaceman if you turn on that starlight. Take me out dancing and I will keep you up all night. Yeah, all night. I once had luck on my side. sad look on my side. I might get lucky again. Well, I'm up in orbit and I hope that we collide. And I'll get lucky again.
Daniel Kirkwood, Sunday night, 7 o'clock at the Rookery. Better get in there early, 6 o'clock when they open up the doors and get a seat. It's promising to be a heck of a concert.
The Treadwell Mine Saltwater Pump House has stood sentinel on the 80-acre sandy beach in Douglas for nearly 100 years. During February, K2 will host a month-long celebration featuring art showcasing the structure. Join us for our first Friday reception on February 7th from 4:30 to 6 p.m. here at the KTOO studios at the corner of Egan Drive and Whittier as we celebrate this unique part of Juneau and Douglas's history.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 7th of February, 2014. It's the birthday of Sinclair Lewis, Sauk Satter, Minnesota, 1885, went off to Yale University, became a journalist, traveled all across the country, traveled around Europe, but most of his books are set in small-town Midwestern America. His first big success, his novel Main Street, in 1920. It's the birthday of Laura Ingalls Wilder, born just north of Pepin, Wisconsin, 1867, who began writing when she was in her 60s, The Little House on the Prairie, and other books in the Little House series. It's the birthday of the poet David Ignato, born in Brooklyn, 1914. His father was a Russian immigrant who loved Tolstoy, Turgenev, and Chekhov. The son had to go to work in the family bindery company, eventually became president, but still wrote poetry whenever he got the chance. His books include Rescue the Dead and I Have a Name. And it's the birthday of Charles Dickens, born Portsmouth, England, 1812. His father was thrown in debtor's prison when the boy was 12. He was forced to go work in a factory, putting labels on jars of shoe polish. He never forgot that. By his mid-40s, Dickens was a very popular and successful writer. He'd written Oliver Twist and Nicholas Nickleby, A Christmas Carol, David Copperfield, earned enough money he could buy a country house called Gad's Hill Place, near where he had grown up. The same year he bought that house, he helped his friend Wilkie Collins write a play, and Dickens hired the cast, which included an 18-year-old actress named Ellen Ternan. And Dickens, who was 45, fell in love with Ellen, became frustrated by his marriage of more than 20 years, the 10 children he had to support. He felt that he and his wife Catherine were simply not made for each other. And a year later, he and his wife separated. Dickens's affair with Ellen Ternan lasted for the rest of his life, though he was very careful to keep her out of the public eye. He wrote less and toured more. After that, he gave readings of A Christmas Carol, which he did in very dramatic fashion. He made a tour of the United Kingdom, giving 149 performances of selections from his novels, in which he reenacted Bill Sykes's murder of his lover Nancy from Oliver Twist. In the late 1860s, he gave a reading tour of the United States, 76 shows, even while his health was failing and he suffered from repeated small strokes. Doctors warned him not to do it again, but 3 months after his final public reading, he died of a cerebral hemorrhage at the age of 58. Here's a poem for today by Maxine Cumin. Our ground time here will be brief. Blue landing lights make nail holes in the dark. A fine snow falls. We sit on the tarmac, taking on the mail, quick freight, trays of laboratory mice, coffee and Danish for the passengers. Wherever we're going is Monday morning. Wherever we're coming from is Mother's lap. On the cloud pack above, strewn as loosely as parsnip or celery seeds, lie the souls of the unborn, my children's children's children, and their father. We gather speed for the last run and lift off into the weather. Maxine Cumin's poem, Our Ground Time Here, will be brief, from her book of that title, Our Ground Time Here Will Be Brief, published by Penguin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 23 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guests are here as part of a really interesting thing. Occasionally people drop into Alaska. You know? And a famous pianist is here with us in the thing. Pierce Lane is here. And with him, Caleb Etcher, who's the executive director of the Sitka Summer Music Festival. There's a fundraiser tonight. Pierce is going to play, I guess, the entire set of Chopin Nocturnes. This is a house concert. It's going to be held at Doug Smith's house at 6:30 tonight, mm-hmm. beginning, okay? It is $100 a head, but it comes with food and drink and the entire set of the Chopin Nocturnes, and it's a wonderful fundraiser for the Sitka Summer Music Festival. Kayla, welcome.
Thank you, Pat. Great to be here.
Pierce, heartily welcome. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence.
God bless you. Thank you.
So you have a really wild schedule set up for yourself. You started Friday night at Carnegie Hall, and now you're on the road, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Do you ever sleep?
It's been an interesting start of the year. I was in St. Petersburg at the start of the year, where they were dismayed that there was no snow for the new year. Very unusual. And then I was in Holland, and then briefly in England, performing with Patricia Routledge. I don't know if you know the wonderful actress from Keeping Up Appearances. We do a show together. And then it was off to New York to rehearse with the American Symphony and did a concert at Carnegie Hall on Friday night. Flew down Saturday to El Paso and did a recital there. And the following night in Las Cruces in New Mexico, and then up here to the snow.
So no question about whether you have MVP status on all of the airlines that you fly with. So, and now you're in Alaska, you're going to do the concert here tonight, and then you're on your way to Fairbanks, as I understand?
That's right. I'll be in Fairbanks next Wednesday, I think it is, and then three concerts with Zul Bailey and Paul Rosenthal in Anchorage, and then with Paul and solo in Soldotna, and then back to Sitka, where I'll give a lunchtime recital on the 22nd and do all the complete Chopin Nocturnes there on the 22nd. All of these Chopin Nocturne experiences are by candlelight, so it's very atmospheric.
Mm. And the same as tonight?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So, and I don't know, you were talking about Doug's piano. Right? It's quite a wonderful instrument.
It's 101 years old, Steinway. It's been reconditioned, I think, three times during that period, but it's a lovely piano. And it made me inspired to practice for long hours yesterday.
wonderful. You enjoy it?
I did enjoy it very much, and he's an amazing guy. He tunes his own piano. I don't meet many pianists who can do that, actually.
Doug is quite an amazing guy. Mm. I understand why he tunes his own piano. I think we get a piano tuner into Juneau once a year. So.
Right.
You can't just go to the street corner and have someone show up and tune your piano. Kayla, tell us a bit more about the upcoming Summer Music Festival.
So the series of events in February is kind of a new addition to our program, but of course the Sitka Summer Music Festival, founded by Paul Rosenthal in 1972 and 40 years plus going strong, the flagship series is still in June, and plans are coming together for that as well. You can find what we know about all upcoming events at our website, sitkamusicfestival.org, and we do know some of the guests for this summer, but we're planning a full month of concerts and community events during the entire month of June, so if folks are thinking that far ahead, they can certainly go there and check out the schedule as it's developing.
And it's on the web at this point.
As much as we know now.
Kind of watch the schedule as it grows.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for putting on a wonderful concert here in Juneau and the opportunity. There are still some seats available.
There are, and I know that folks in Juneau have a lot of wonderful opportunities tonight and this weekend. But you know, if this is something that you have, you know, decided that you don't want to miss out on, I highly recommend it. And we do have a few seats available yet for folks if they want one. I'd recommend they call me.
Okay.
At this point. And my phone number is 907-738-7006. And I'd be happy to talk them through the other details.
Okay, Kayla, that's a Sitka number, right? So
it is a Sitka number.
Sitka cell phone.
Yep.
Okay, good. So it's 907-738-7006 if you're interested in attending the house concert tonight at 6:30 at Doug Smith's house. The 101-year-old Steinway, played by a world-famous pianist who has a lot of air miles underneath his belt here and is keeping a wonderful schedule to bring us all some stuff. Pierce, thank you so much for coming in
and sharing.
Thanks for sharing us the state of Alaska.
Has the romance disappeared from your latest love story? The mystery gone out of your whodunit? Then it's time to visit the Juneau Public Library. Kids, take a chance on a new novel. Adults, it's time for a blind date with a book. Find these surprise titles in both fiction and nonfiction at your local public library and unwrap a new favorite. Brought to you by the Friends of the Juneau Public Library. Visit juneau.org/library or find us on Facebook.
This is Bird Note. Snowy owls are a mystery to us in many ways. In some years, great numbers come south from the Arctic to reside in fields, farmlands, and shorelines. In other years, we see very few. People have long wondered where they come from and why. In the past, it was believed that population crashes of lemmings on the breeding grounds caused many owls to come south. But their movements are more complex and unpredictable than that. They are affected by weather, availability of prey, and breeding success. The years that we see many owls in the south actually seem to be the result of an abundance of lemmings on the breeding grounds. This owl food can lead to fantastic breeding success and throngs of hungry young owls. Many may be driven southward by competition with more dominant adult owls. Each nomadic owl is on a lifelong journey spanning continents in search of food. Individuals have been tracked moving from Alaska to the Canadian Arctic to Russia over the course of just a couple of years. Some wander the pack ice, hundreds of miles from land, where they feed in Arctic darkness on seabirds that they snatch from the water with their hooked talons. When one of these Arctic wanderers comes south to reside in a farmer's field, we get to glimpse a moment in a long journey that we as humans can hardly imagine. For Bird Note, I'm Garrett Vinn. To see these owls on video, come to birdnote.org.
It's about 15 minutes before 4 o'clock. My next guests are going to do a talk out at the Glacier Visitors Center tonight. And the occasion for the talk is in my hands, even as we speak. I didn't realize until they pointed it out to me. But Richard Carstensen and Bob Armstrong are here. They are two of the three authors of The Nature of Southeast Alaska, A Guide to Plants, Animals, and Habitats. They have just come out with the 2014 third edition. And indeed, I am holding it in my hand even as we speak, and it looks lovely. This is a book that needs to be in your backpack. It is an amazing collection of not just words about Alaska, but some of the best photographs and a huge number of wonderful drawings. Who's the artist?
Bob does the photos, and I do the drawings.
And you do the drawings. This is such an encyclopedic reference that it's something you should have with you every time you step out your front door down here. And it's wonderfully balanced in that a lot of times there's the temptation, I think, to go totally positive with something like this, and you have your negative things to say about our climate as well as the positive ones. It's very realistic. Anyway, so you're giving a talk tonight up at the Glacier Visitor Center.
Right.
What's the plan? What will you be doing?
Sharing some of the things that are new about it, especially. As we were wrapping it up, I took a look at the table of contents, and I thought, boy, you know, if somebody knows this book and they were holding the two side by side and only looking at the table of contents, they might say, geez, do I need this new edition? But it's actually hugely upgraded. And we're each going to split the talk and each talk about some of the things that we dove into to make it a improved product.
Bob, not only do you take the photos, did you do the selection for how they fold into the written word?
Most of my photos are associated with what I call sidebars.
Uh-huh.
And so they're personal experiences that I've had generally since the last edition was published. Like there'd be a sidebar, Bugs on the Snow.
Mm-hmm.
And the different bugs you might see in wintertime and why they're there, and exciting events that have personal touch to them.
When did the first edition come out?
1992.
Okay.
And there were three of us. Rita was part of the original book, and we alternated chapters through the book, so it would have been too confusing to use the first person. The reader would have been lost who's talking here. So we're compromising now, and we're keeping the third person, the royal we, in the text as it was before, but we both enjoy writing the first person more. Mm-hmm. So that's what the sidebars kind of allow us to branch out and do that. And so we sign the sidebar either Bob or Richard.
It certainly makes it, first of all, interesting and more personal.
Yeah.
The effect is you're reading along, and then there's this little column over there with a colored back or something like that, so you know mm-hmm. it's going to be, and it's a little story about what's going on in the main text. So fact-filled stuff and like that. The venue that you'll be presenting in tonight is a wonderful venue because there are two programs that are the same. The way the fireside lectures work up at the Glacier Visitor Center is that there's a program at 6:30, the early show, and then at 8 o'clock the same program is repeated. So there's an opportunity if you don't if your schedule is such that you can make it at 6:30, then welcome. And if you can't make it till after dinner, then come up at 8 o'clock and the same material is going to be discussed at that point. So, got pictures tonight for the show?
Yeah, lots of illustrations, and then I'm going to show a few videos,
mm-hmm.
like a video of a doe that had just recently given birth, and with the fawns associated with her, and terns interacting with her youngsters, and.
So, are you planning the fourth edition yet?
Oh, boy. I don't know if we're going to be alive for the fourth edition if it takes another 20 years. But it does, when you redo a book that's 20 years old, it forces you to think backward into the past and also go, yeah, what's going to be going on in Southeast Alaska 20 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So we added an afterword that kind of addresses that. The last book just kind of went right up to blueberries and stopped, and they thought, we need to sort of give a little more of a summary
mm-hmm.
here.
Mm-hmm.
So we've added it afterward.
Good. I think a lot of – have you gotten – how much public input, how much reader input played a part in what you did with the third edition?
A lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about that, too, reflecting on – this is a book by generalists. Bob and I and Rita all consider ourselves fairly broad, but maybe not so deep compared to a scientist.
Uh-huh.
And this is really a book by Juneau as well as about Juneau in Southeast. You could not have written this book in Pelican or in Heidelberg because what we know comes from all the people in this town, not just the experts, but like I work for Discovery Southeast, and a third grader's eyes are way better than an adult's eyes, and they're closer to the ground, and they're going to show something to their naturalist, and their naturalist is going to say, hey, Richard, look at this.
Mm-hmm.
So the Juno has an amazing breadth amazing grasp of the place that we live in.
And it's an amazing place to live in as well. The Nature of Southeast Alaska, A Guide to Plants, Animals, and Habitats. The book is just out in its third edition. Richard Carstensen and Bob Armstrong will be out at the Glacier Visitors Center at 6:30 and 8 o'clock tonight to talk about it, bringing pictures, some videos, and some wonderful stuff. The cover has one of the most fascinating photographs of an eagle and an eagle chick. How you got to the point where you could take that photograph is probably worthy of a story because mm-hmm. it's up in the top of a tree. Thanks, guys, for telling us about it, and thank you so much for revising the book and giving us another reference for the trail.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good luck with time.
Every year, the City and Borough of Juneau's Youth Activity Board reviews grant proposals submitted by local organizations providing or desiring to provide athletic, cultural, artistic, or extracurricular academic activity programs to the youth of Juneau. The deadline application is March 3rd. For more information, please review the Youth Activities Grant webpage at juneau.org under Hot Topics. This message brought to you by the City and Borough of Juneau.
About 6 minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. My next guest is the featured artist at the Juneau Artist Gallery tonight for First Friday, and I am holding in my hand a lovely necklace. What is that stone?
That is it's a turquoise stone.
Uh-huh.
It's a form of turquoise called chrysoprase.
And it's just absolutely lovely. Abby Focht is the artist here, and she's showing jewelry tonight. Some of us had a chance to see it during the public market. She had a prominent spot over near the food, which always attracts lots of people.
No, it wasn't near the food. It was out in the main lobby.
Oh, you were in the main lobby. Okay.
Yeah, main lobby.
Okay. I got you mixed up as far as where you were. Anyway, these are lovely. This is the necklace is interesting because it's asymmetric. There's a chain that has another set of stones on just one side, which is very dramatic. Anyway, and then there's a set of birch bark earrings here, which are also very lovely. They have a silver sheen to them. What'd you do? Is that a dye or?
What was that?
Is this these metal, the birch barks?
They're silver earrings,
yeah.
And I do the texturing myself.
Uh huh.
The birch bark texturing. So I start with a raw sheet metal. and form and shape, you know, the bark, you know, the rounded shape, the bark shape, and then I do the texturing with a jeweler's saw and punch the holes and, or drill the holes, actually, and add the beads.
Mm-hmm. And here's a triple ring.
I call them my stack ring sets.
Stack ring sets, okay. Mm-hmm.
Or the set of stack rings.
What are the stones again?
That one is ruby, amethyst, and garnet.
Ah. And this is a lovely little three ring set that you kind of offset the three stones, and it's basically three rings that are stacked on your finger.
Yeah, three rings sold as a set. They mm-hmm. can be worn, you know, they're not soldered together, so they can be worn individually, or you can wear as many as you want, or all together.
These are really dramatic pieces. They're just very, very nice. I was telling her I can almost see my daughter with those earrings on. Anyway, so how large will your show be? How much jewelry are you going to be seeing?
So I have two cases of jewelry at the Juno Artist Gallery, and I'm a member of the gallery, so they're up all year round. Mm-hmm. Just happens to be that this month I'm the featured artist. So I have made a few new pieces for Valentine's Day and for this event for First Friday. So I made some new little heart post earrings, two different styles that are up there, and I also made some heart hook earrings that are with different textured. So that's what's new for this event. And then I also have a couple necklace, bracelet, earring sets, you know, that are sold as a set, and they're all complimentary pieces.
Abby, I'm curious. Well, we probably need to mention the Juno Artist Gallery because it's a wonderful operation. It's a co-op.
It is a co-op.
There's, what, 17 artists, I think? Or?
Yeah, about that. A little shy of 20. We're trying to recruit new members at the moment because we've had a couple leave in the past year.
Yeah.
So it's a cooperative, meaning that we all own part of the gallery. We each pay rent for the space that we have our cases or our displays in. We each work there a couple days a month, depending on how big our space is. And that's part of being a cooperative. Mm-hmm. And then we also have gallery meetings once a month, so everybody can give their input and knows what's going on. And there's different people that are on different, I wouldn't say boards necessarily, but, you know, they're in charge of different things, and that's a president, and those positions are up, you know, can change annually. You can vote for someone else to be in the position. I think those meetings or the meetings at which those changes may happen, it happens like once a year or so.
What time are you opening tonight?
The gallery walk, or the first Friday, starts at 4:30, and it goes to 7.
So within a half hour, you'll be mm-hmm. you'll be on stage with the whole thing.
Exactly. Go mm-hmm. right over there from here.
Well, marvelous pieces. Thank you so much for bringing them down and sharing. The Juno Artist Gallery, by the way, is back in kind of next to the stairwell in the back of the Senate building, the old Senate building.
Senate building on Franklin Street.
So go in the door and kind of angle off to the right.
It's in the back to the right, yes.
Okay, good. All right. Well, thank you so much. You've been listening to KTOO Juno. We broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area. K276 AF is in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay. K269 AO is in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek. K201 AM is in Gustavus. K220 BT in Hoonah. And K210 AS is in Excursion Inlet and also broadcast to Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable at digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. You've been listening to Juno Afternoon. On Monday at 3, Joan Pardis will be your host for Juno Afternoon. She'll be talking with Beth Kertula about her recent past and her upcoming future. Kelly Moore will come in to talk about Meals with Midge in Skate City, and John Gasella will be here to highlight the upcoming charter school fundraiser. It's called A Taste of Ethiopia. Thank you so much for listening tonight. Lots of wonderful activities for everyone to take in, and you can start within a half hour by going over to the Juno Artist Gallery and seeing these wonderful jewelry pieces by our guest who just spoke with us, Abby Focht. There's a talk out at the university, and right now it's time for All Things Considered.